The Carmichael Dave Show.
He's on the microphone when he's not on the microphone. He's playing a song, and when he's not playing a song, he's on the microphone, and then boom!
With Jason Ross.
No, he didn't! Yes, he did!
Call or text at 916-339-1140.
It's the Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross on Sacktown Sports.
Jason, can I just say one more thing on the broader stadium situation?
Sure.
So Rob Manfred on Monday had an interesting comment that I was going to throw in at some point, but now might as well. Talking about public financing for stadiums. He said there's a long history of public financing of not just baseball, but sports venues in general. Brings quality of life and entertainment opportunities to residents and an economic driver. And the economic driver thing has gotten picked up. Now, over the last decade plus, including here in Sacramento, a public-private partnership has become more the norm. And even in the A's case, at least the way it's set up in Las Vegas, you know, it's about $350 million coming from Vegas or from Nevada, and the rest, the other billion, basically, for the stadium is coming from John Fisher and friends. That's the setup. But this type of thing has happened in other stadiums, in other cities. And everyone, you know, there's this huge debate about economic driver. Is an arena, is a stadium an economic driver? And the evidence is unequivocal that cities at best break even and in most cases dollar to dollar lose money on the investment, on the drive. Now, I think one point that should be made here is that a baseball stadium is different than an NFL stadium is different than an arena, because in a baseball stadium's case, let me just give you this. In the NBA last year, the Bulls led the league in attendance. 841,000 people went to 41 home games. In the NFL last year, Dallas led the league in attendance. 748,755 went to 8 Dallas Cowboy home games. In baseball, the LA Dodgers in 81 home games, 3.8 million. Now, that's not just turnstiles into the stadium. It's also that many people are coming to the stadium. Yeah. And, you know, in the Dodgers
more
case.
More bites at the apple,
right,
more games.
That's exactly right. So baseball is a little bit different. And we're not counting these numbers that these very smart people put together. It bothers me because they're smarter than me, but they're also huge falsehoods in there. For example, they're not counting, for example, that you look at the Bulls attendance. Okay, cool. How many non-Bulls events happened at the arena that year that also drove people down? Can we include those? All right, even when we include those, here's the bottom line that people have, they don't want to grab. The entire business of sports is not economically viable for the fan because you can't, the entire business of sports is in unmeasurables. Are they making, is the city making direct money that you can mathematize, not a word, off of attendance and parking and all that? No, again, the evidence is unequivocal. But when you talk about air quotes quality of life, what I'm talking about there is what price do you put on a family of four going to a game and seeing NBA players and their team win? Well, you put the ticket price on there. But what price do you put on them not having to drive here, there, or whatever to go see a concert, to go see whatever? You're never going to tell the full story of an arena or a stadium and its worth to the city by simple financial mathematics. Now, Chris, I know you want to get in here, and I'm sure you have plenty of issue with what I'm saying. I don't think you and I are really, though, far off. I'm not saying the money couldn't be better used elsewhere. I'm not saying it's the best use of taxpayer money. That's not an argument I can even come close to making. I'm saying that when you are discussing the benefits of an arena or a stadium, it can't just be mathematical. However, you also can't quantify what the other benefits are in a dollars and cents way.
Well, I think that's what I've been telling you for years, is that same point.
What?
Of you got to look at more than just money. It's just, I think when people say, like, if we build an arena, this is 100% going to make money, because that hasn't been true anywhere. But there is a point of, like, hey, like a town square type of situation of, hey, where are you going this weekend? I'm going to that thing at the arena.
Right.
Oh, isn't that thing at the arena? Oh, remember when we went to the arena? I think that is a big thing. Yeah.
It's a huge thing, and it's unquantifiable.
The thing I don't like is when government officials get involved and you see, like, this is going to be, like, I want to say it was the Milwaukee Arena where they're like, this is going to completely change the state of Wisconsin. Like, right. What are you getting that from?
And you're right, but I think Sacramento's a great case in the sense, I can tell you right now, COVID really hurt the deal. It's not a terrible deal, but they've had to do what they didn't want to do, which is dip into the fund a couple of times. That being said, all you have to do is go down. Look, downtown's still got issues. But all you have to do is go down to Golden One Center and look at DoCo and look at the surrounding area. That it is absolutely night and day what it was 12 years ago when you had, what was it, the Macy's in the movie theater?
Yeah. And isn't the challenge now, honestly, non-game days, non-event days? Like, look, it's still a great place to go. But, like, I have a reason because I'm going to Janet Jackson.
That's
I have
right.
a reason because I'm going to the Kings.
That's right.
I have a reason because I'm going to the high school championship, whatever it is.
Right.
But it's Tuesday. Why not go down? And that's, I think, what they're – because they've got a lot of dates that are filled.
They do.
But not all of them.
No, not all of them. That's why you got guys, you know, James Rasmussen is a name probably nobody knows that works down at Golden One Center. Great guy. And he and his team are in charge of not just filling that arena with dates, but here's the other thing. People forget, ARCO Arena. There were a ton of acts that we lost to Oakland, to Shoreline, to San Francisco, to L.A. because the – artists didn't want to come into the arena because their modern day loadouts were not compatible with the prehistoric situation going on technically at ARCO. Golden One Center, state of the art. It's made for that. So that's how you get Paul McCartney or Coldplay or you know, Bruce Springsteen Janet Jackson. These are a lot of but how do you measure that? Of course you can measure the financial impact. Well, this many tickets were bought this much. Right. This is what they did. Of course you can do that. What you can't measure, though, is, Billy and little Janie and Frankie got to go see Janet Jackson, which they wouldn't have been able to do in San Francisco. It's that access to memories. How do you monetize that?
Right.
How do you put a number on that?
Yeah, and the offshoots just go.
Oh, they do a good job, Ticketmaster.
Well, they do, but like the offshoots of so many of those things, like, okay, maybe I never go to a Kings game, but I become a Kings fan because they're in this town. Mm-hmm. I watch them on TV, and I went and bought a Kings gear at a place that, doesn't directly go to downtown in the team store, but I'm a Kings fan, and I bought it at a Dick's Sporting Goods.
Sure.
But that's because I'm a Kings fan.
That's right. And if the Kings aren't here.
That's not directly all connected, but it is connected.
100,000%. And if you don't have this to spend your discretionary income on, what are you going to have to spend your discretionary? You're going to find something, but it's going to be a lower quality thing, perhaps, to spend your discretionary income on. Your thing about – go ahead, Chris.
The one thing that's funny about this discussion is that none of this makes sense in Las Vegas.
No, because it's all there already. The A's are not – no one's being like, I wasn't going to go to Vegas, but the A's – the A's are like the side dish of side dishes when you have all these entrees there. It's like, yes, we'll go. Yeah, let's go.
I would say the A's are the ginger. It's just there.
Son?
Huh?
Mason?
No.
The ginger on the sushi plate.
Yes.
Yes. Just not like, even the wasabi.
There. Should I have it? Oh, I don't know.
It's
maybe.
A palate cleanser. Let's go from smoky, lit up, techno playing casino, swimming pool, whatever. Oh, let's go sit for 3 hours and watch baseball. That's a little bit of a change of pace.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say, Chris, you brought up Ticketmaster. I guess this segment's gone. I think I told you guys recently, I won't say who, but there was a fairly prominent politician whose person, whoever, called me and said, hey, we've got this bill coming out and we want to know if you'll publicly support it. I'm like, what's the bill? And by the way, why are you asking a douchebag like me? But they did. this bill, you may have seen it on your social media. You know, they're spending a ton of money on advertising. Basically, they're talking about trying to cap Ticketmaster fees in California. And the reason why I didn't come out for it and the reason why I didn't support it is I simply asked the question, why is nobody raising a bill that is straight cutting them? Like, no, you don't get fees. Build it into the ticket price or come up with a flat percent. But why are we
or
not
break up the monopoly?
Well, and again, I'm not a big fan of paralysis by analysis. I agree with you. But if there's a way to make real change, even if it's not the change that you really should have, I'm okay with baby steps. But for me to enter, nobody disagrees in the public. If you put it up to vote, do you like Ticketmaster fees? I'm pretty sure that's not going to pass. So it's like, why don't we cap it? No more secondary markets. Screw them. Your choice is to buy it from the venue. No secondary markets. Unless you're an individual and then cap the individual on what they're selling and make these websites very, like, okay, face value is $55. You can go up to 5% above $55. That's what's happening because people are buying these chunks of tickets and then they're reselling them based on demand and people are paying these crazy amounts. Cut that out. I don't care if you kill the third-party ticket resellers. Cut out the Ticketmaster charges. Make it a flat charge, $5, $6, $7. The answer, believe it or not, I got legitimately. That'll never pass. Why won't it pass? It'll never pass because Ticketmaster and these third parties are so deep in the pockets of these politicians that they won't put that up because they'll lose their seats. To which my response was simply this. Is there not a politician out there that will hold a press conference in front of a venue and lay everything I just said out for the public and say, I'm creating a website, nomorefees.com, and I'm going to post every single politician that votes against this along with the publicly available dollar amounts from these third parties, from these ticket masters that were put into their election coffers, and we're going to have real actual transparency. And if they want to go on record and vote against putting more money in the pockets of people that pay for tickets, let them run on that in 2, 3, or 4 years and see how many people grow cojones at that point. The answer, that's a great idea. It's just not how it's done. And to me, and you can apply that to so many different things that are far more important than this, but to me, that is the most, simultaneously, it is the most enticing reason to me to get into politics. And at the same time, the biggest reason why I will never get into politics, because that's how it is.
You've always had the itch.
I've got a friend who, whenever they get a text message like, hey, we're counting on your vote, like type of thing, her response is always, get rid of Ticketmaster and you have my vote.
Yeah, my vote forever.
That's their response.
That's their response every time.
We talk about no-brainers for politicians. Put a Super Bowl, you know, make Monday after Super Bowl a holiday. This, that, whatever. This is one of those no-brainers. Yeah. And you're right, I have always had the itch. I don't talk about it anymore. Yeah. Because you know why? Even, by the way, even if somebody was stupid enough to vote for me and I were to get elected to something, I won't put my wife and kids through that. You think referees and umpires have a bad time? Oh, you know what I want to do? I want to quit whatever successful career I'm having, and I want to go be a public servant and try to do some good and get constantly railroaded by red tape and bureaucracy. And, oh, by the way, oh, somebody just mailed my kid a baby doll with a knife in it. No, I'm good. I'm actually good on that. I'm actually good on not doing that because that's the state of where things are right now. And it's gross and it's weird and I don't like it.
Known as Carmichael Dave, he once said on his evening show.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. Burn those tapes.
Look, man, the amount of.
Is that funny?
The amount of skeletons. I mean, I made a comment about homeless people during the whole arena thing that still makes me cringe.
Does that do anything for you?
Yeah, it wouldn't. In a world, we'll take a break. Hey, congratulations to Victor Wembanyama. We're going to take a quick 30-second break. When we come back, we'll get a playoff recap. We will talk about Wemby a little bit. We'll mush those together. And stay tuned for a very important message from Jason Ross in just 10 seconds. We're right back after this.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Very good sources, and he just kind of tells it as it is and gets to the point.
Jason Ross.
He has a lot of pretty smart things to say.
He's good at what he does.
On Sacktown Sports.
We do that on purpose? Atta baby. Sometimes Chris does good things. We're raging against the machine here on Sacktown Sports.
Would it be interesting if we all three of us ran for the same position and like we had to do like the hate commercials against one another?
The diss tracks.
Yeah.
Dave and I would 100% team up against you.
But the thing is.
And I would try to interrupt and go, I do not support this message.
I couldn't do a bad political ad against Jason. Sure, that's the problem. He's really, he likes the LA teams. Like, that's the worst I can come up with. Burn. Sometimes he scratches his beard. I don't know.
Jason Ross is from Orange County, California.
Better known as a spy. What Jason was saying during the break is like, at some point it's going to come out, because I'd have to run as like Carmichael Dave. Yeah. And it's going to come out like, he actually lives in Roseville. What else is he hiding?
Yeah. What's his real name?
Christopher Laud would rather his kid shoot somebody than get pregnant.
As heard right here.
The problem is, Jason, Chris would probably win because all his ads would just be all the stuff he saved up out of context on this program. Man.
Yeah,
we'd have no chance.
I won't run against Chris. I would not want to do that.
No, let Chris, you go be the politician. President,
make a change.
President Verlaud.
Make a difference.
Make that change, 2024.
Yes, Janet Jackson.
All right. Victor Wembanyama, unanimous choice for Rookie of the Year, the 18th first overall pick since the lottery started in the early 80s to win Rookie of the Year. Since the lottery began, Jason Ross, yeah. I did some research here.
Yes, you did.
I did. I was up most of the night on this. Only players outside of the top 10 to win Rookie of the Year include Mark Jackson. Did Mark Jackson go to St. John's?
Yeah,
I think.
Yes.
Okay. Michael Carter Williams, Kentucky?
Syracuse, maybe? I don't know.
And Malcolm Brogdon, I cannot remember.
Virginia.
Virginia, thank you. Brogdon went 36th, by the way. We talked about it yesterday with Wemby. You know, what is he going to look like 5 years from now?
Yeah,
I mean, he's going to be tall.
I'm trying to think. Do you mind pulling up a list of the last... like rookie of the, or just the Rookie of the Year winners, because look, he has had one of the great rookies of the year ever. We said it. You said it. You know, you looked up his numbers versus LeBron. LeBron had one of the greats. He's had one of the great Rookie of the Years. So I'm trying to think what we would have said maybe in the last 10 years of Rookie of the Years, like, watch out for this guy in 3 years. And then did that pan out?
Well done on Michael Carter Williams going to Syracuse.
Okay.
I don't remember, you know, again, a lot of this is hindsight. I don't remember there being a big hullabaloo over Michael Carter. It was almost like one of those, like, well, he had to give it to somebody.
Had to win, yeah.
Andrew Wiggins, I believe, was the number one pick.
Yes.
By Cleveland, wasn't it, originally?
The Kevin Love,
yeah. Mm-hmm. He won it in 14-15. Again,
we thought a lot of potential was there. He seemed like a clear-cut number one.
Right. Karl Anthony Towns the following year.
Okay.
Unanimous. I think we thought it was like, this guy's going to be really good. Like a high star, low superstar. Malcolm Brogdon, that was almost like the Michael Carter Williams. Like, okay, well, good story. Then you had Ben Simmons. The big thing with Ben Simmons was it was like the Blake Griffin thing. Like, well, he sat a year. Is he really the Rookie of the Year?
Yeah.
But
there was so much talk about unbelievable potential. 6'9", 6'10", point guard. Like, this guy could be – who else can be like him in the league? He can defend. He can – I mean, there were some questions maybe about shooting, but look, he was doing everything as a rookie.
By the way, this is before I fell in love with Ben Simmons. His rookie year, Jason, with Philadelphia, 81 games. He averaged 16 points, 8.2 assists, 8.1 rebounds, just under 2 steals a game on 54.5% shooting. That was his rookie year. By the way, all but rebounds there were career highs. He averaged 8.8 rebounds his second year. So you're thinking, okay.
At that point, like, where's he going to be in 5 years? You can't stop him. He gets
MVP
downhill.
Candidate. The line I will never forget is he's a lesser offensive-oriented but 10 times more defensive-oriented Magic
Correct.
Johnson.
Yeah.
That's
so
the
that
line.
Was the comps. Not there, right?
So
but sad. That, yeah. But that's how we felt at that time, and you can't ignore that feeling.
Do we need to go into the year after Ben Simmons, or can we skip it?
I'd like to hear it, because now I'm intrigued. Oh, yeah. Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
No, but look.
We 100% thought Luka Doncic was going to be a superstar after his first year. And he is.
Yeah.
Not much there. Ja Morant, same thing.
Yeah.
Ja Morant, who I believe is the number two pick.
But, yes, yeah. And, you know, again, kind of another case of when you miss, you're not completely forgotten, but people move past you on the list, right?
Right.
Like Ja Morant, future of the league. Well, he's still here. Yeah. Zion Williamson, future of the league. They're still around, but when you miss time, you're kind of forgotten about a little bit.
And Ja Morant, by the way, will only be 25 going into next season. Then we go with Florida State's Scotty Barnes.
Who, by the way, I don't think it gets a lot. Like, I think he has potential to be really good. He's a really good player.
I think the problem, if you want to call it a problem, is that he's on a very, very irrelevant Toronto team. When you look at his numbers last year, I want to say they went down a little bit. I could be wrong. No, they didn't. 20 points a game, a little over 8 boards, a little over 6 assists, a block and a half, a steal and a half. And he's doing this on 47, 34, 78 splits. And, by the way, pretty good defense.
Yeah, they made him the feature of that team moving on from Siakam Van Vliet.
Van Vliet. And now Ananobi's gone as well. I mean, he really is the centerpiece of that squad.
Yeah.
Paolo Banchero last year, I think we're all on the same. Yeah, he's a stud. And then Wembanyama, who really has had kind of a historically great – we talked about it, how Wembanyama's rookie year was actually better numbers-wise than LeBron's. And when you look at just all-time – now, look, number for number, you got to be fair, number for number – Shaq, I think, had a better rookie year. If we're going to go back, like, further, Wilt Chamberlain, like, we can't even count that. Like, dude averaged, like, 36 points a game his rookie year. ESPN made a list of some of the greatest rookie seasons ever, and the basketball ones we've already talked about. Tim Duncan.
Uh-huh.
By the way, Wemby better. Kareem, by the numbers, better. Magic. Wembanyama's, I think, was better, but not by a ton. And then, dude, let's see if you ever top this. 37.6 points, 27 rebounds, MVP, Rookie of the Year, and All-NBA First Team, All-Star, Wilt Chamberlain. Like, it's so ridiculous, you almost have to, like, it's like the figure skating judges. You have to take out the high and the low. Some other ones from other sports. Jim Brown's rookie year. Lawrence Taylor's rookie year. Dan Marino, CJ Stroud, probably the best rookie year ever. Only one of two guys to get an MVP his rookie year was Ichiro. Ichiro won the MVP. The Rookie of the Year was an All-Star, Golden Glove, and Silver Slugger.
Wow.
Fred Lynn was the other one that won Rookie of the Year. Jason, you and I, this is in our wheelhouse, Dwight Gooden's rookie year.
Uh-huh.
And he had 17 wins, 7 complete games, 276 strikeouts, and a 2.6 ERA. And if I'm not mistaken, I think his sophomore year was better. I think he had a 1.85 ERA and 300 strikeouts that year. And then you go to Lemieux, Ovechkin, if you want to get in there. Candace Parker's rookie year, Asia Wilson, Breonna Stewart, Tamika Catchings. And Wemby's right there with all of them. They're in a really the setup for a rivalry between Wemby and Chet Holmgren, also being in the same conference, is there as well. As you and I said, it's health, dude.
It's health. I think he's in the right organization. Hearing him, every time I've heard him, it sounds like a guy that wants to chase greatness, because I think when you're that good, it does kind of come easy. But you can't cut corners. Like, you have to be driven to be elite. I think he can just play this way and be a great player from here on out. But does he want to be one of the greats of all time? He's going to have to keep working. I think he can do it.
I want you to think of a question or think of an answer during the break. I'm going to ask you again. I know we talked about this briefly yesterday. Is Victor Wembanyama, where does he rank on your no-trade list in the NBA? When we come back, we talked about sports beefs yesterday, or beeves, if you will, plural. Pat Riley versus Jimmy Butler. We have audio on that we played earlier. We'll re-rack that. And Pat Riley always wins, but should he? That's the question. We'll be right back after this.
Bleed black and purple. It's the Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross
on your local sports leader,
Sacktown Sports.
Jason.
Yes?
That's one of the banes of my existence, what you just brought up yesterday.
Yesterday, yep.
What is the move when you have seen someone on a regular basis for way too long, and you have no idea what their name is.
Yeah.
And I can tell you there's probably at least 6 to 8 people in this building that qualify for me.
Right.
Where the movie's just like, hey.
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on?
How are you?
And I'm always terrified. Like, my blood pressure goes up a little bit every time I talk to these people because I'm just afraid that one time they're going to be like, hey, do you know my name?
And I don't think like, they would ever do. Well, now they may.
I know, right? Yeah, we are playing in the speakers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't ever know it, and like you can't ask them their name.
Right. It's too far along. Like it's if it's the first introduction, second introduction, you know, there's a window, but the window's closed.
You know what you have to do? Huh. This is what I do, is get someone that they have never met before and introduce them
that's,
first.
That's oh, yeah. the move. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's
oh, hey,
the
this
move.
Is Jake.
Yeah, and then they'll go, hey, Jake, and then they'll yeah. be like, hey, I'm Bonnie. Oh, right. Nice to meet you. The worst one is, and we do this all, this happens in our business. It will happen. I'll be at a Kings game, and it'll be like, Dave, what's up, man? And, like, I can tell they have familiarity with me, and we'll do, like, the bro hug or something, be like, you remember me? I was at your show, like, 4 years ago, and then, and I've agonized over this over the years, and this is totally going to screw me now. I always, always, always say, absolutely, I remember you. Dude, how have you been? And, like, I'm aggressive about it.
Yeah.
I have no idea, ever.
You just go, okay, all right, I got you.
All right. Yeah. And I would just say, I'm lying.
Yeah.
But I'm lying because I'm trying to be polite. I don't want to offend the right. person and make them feel bad. And I also feel like it's kind of a... I have a terrible memory about things. I'll give an example. Yesterday, something major happened in Chris's life not that long ago. I won't go into what it was, right. but it's a major thing.
That you should know. This should have remembered.
Not only should I have remembered, but I said, I have no recollection of this. Did you ever tell me? He goes, dude, you sent me like a couple of really nice text messages about it. And I was, oh, what? I racked my brain so hard yesterday after the show, and I have no memory of it. So in a situation like that, it's like, what do you do? I don't want to lie, but I don't want, what am I going to say? I'm sorry, I don't remember you. Oh, you're so big and high and mighty, you can't remember me? Well, that makes me feel great. Am I unmemorable? Like right. that? And they probably wouldn't do that, but I don't know what the right way is. Are you honest and then hurt the person's feelings? Or do you lie through your teeth, but ultimately, hopefully, they'll believe you and you have a great interaction and they feel good and you feel good and you move on?
Or have you ever had it where, like, you've made it through the conversation, you've gone separate ways, and then it clicks. You're like, oh,
yes,
I've got it. And now you almost want to run into them again and then go, because I've got more information that I've now recalled and go, just to prove, like, I know more. Like, oh, yeah, I remember that time we were at whatever, and...
This just happened in the last year. There was some sort of anniversary. Was it maybe 10 years Golden One Center? It was some sort of anniversary thing they were doing before a game at Golden One Center. And I was in this lounge area. There were a lot of people that were like involved in the thing there. And this gentleman comes up that looked familiar, but I didn't recognize. Handshake, bro hug. Dude, how have you been? I've been great, man. How have you been? We have this like very friendly conversation. And then that's it. And there was something off about the conversation. I'll never forget it. And it was off on his, like I was doing something weird, but I didn't know what I was doing that was weird.
And meanwhile, you're racking your brain.
Racking my brain. I know this person. Did I used to work with him? No. Is he a Kings fan that I know? Was he at one of the route? No, but it's something. When the Maloofs were forced to stay here from Anaheim. Remember the 1 year that we got to do the rally season tickets?
Yeah.
And the NBA got it? Okay. So I had a meeting at Arco in Craig Amazine's office, who was then a senior VP with the Kings, and it was Craig Amazine. It was the third guy in charge with the NBA, Chris Granger, who ended up being the Kings president, but he was third in line. He was like the vice commissioner, basically, and a guy named Aaron Ryan. And both of them
worked for a part of the NBA called Teambo. I won't get into it, but basically it's the NBA's liaison to teams to strategize their season. Anyway, so we were talking about, like, you know, they wanted to know all about Sacramento, the grassroots, what makes fans tick here, blah, 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 blah. And then with both Chris and Aaron, when they would go back to New York, I would spend a lot of time texting and on the phone with them about different things that were being activated here and things we were talking about and all that. I mean, hours and hours and hours. The guy that I saw at the anniversary was Aaron Ryan, who I had an incredibly close relationship with, but only met in person once. And when I realized who it was when I got home, I was so embarrassed, because this was a guy that was incredibly vital, who was a huge sounding board, very supportive, that I had a very good relationship with and talked on the phone for hours at a time with this dude, but I'd only met him once. And I think the weirdness is, I think in his eyes, and I might be making this up, he may not even think about this, I think he felt like I wasn't as excited as he was to see me as I was to see him. And had I remembered who it was, I would have bear hugged the guy, because I would have been more excited than him to see him, because he's a hero to me and I didn't remember him. And I have thought, Jason, weekly, do I call him and apologize? Because if I do, he's probably going to say, what are you talking about? I didn't. And then I admit that what happened happened. And I feel like everybody has had that.
Yeah.
But then I also feel like nobody has had that experience. It's just something unique to me, because I'm an idiot when it comes to recognizing people. So I don't know what the deal is. Maybe you rhyme their names with something. I saw that once on a videos my parents got me, where there's a will, there's an A. It was supposed to teach you study habits.
Oh.
It was like, you know, Albania borders on the Adriatic. I dropped out of high school.
Okay.
Sports beefs.
Yes.
Pat Riley is the emperor of kings of heat culture. He is the whatever name you want to call it.
He's also a client. He's the founder.
Yes, he is. He's not just a member. He's right. So Jimmy Butler had made a comment, something to the effect of, if I was on the floor, we, you know, the Celtics would be going home, that type of thing. Jimmy was hurt for the end of the series. That got back to Pat Riley. He was asked about it, and he went in a little bit on Jimmy Butler, especially towards the end here.
So we played Boston four times, I think, in the playoffs since Jimmy's been here. So, you know, you do develop some dislike for the other team, but they are, this year, I think, the best team in the league, with the best roster in the league. They made some great moves. Brad Stevens did a great job in getting Holiday and Porzingis. They built their bench a little bit differently. And, you know, for him to say that, you know, I thought, is that Jimmy trolling or is that Jimmy serious? You know, if you're not on the court playing against Boston or on the court playing against the New York Knicks, you should keep your mouth shut and your criticism of those teams.
We talked about it earlier, but listen, we got a lot of new audience here, and we appreciate everybody who listens for all 4 hours, but I think you and I both agree that's heat culture.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is safe. You say something dumb, and I think especially with Pat Riley, who literally wrote the book on the disease of more, of successful teams that eventually get greedy, want more money, want more recognition, want more this, want more that. You've got the unequivocated superstar of that team, Jimmy Butler, who said something that I think Pat Riley was really offended by and was protective of the other guys on the roster who had to not feel good when Jimmy said that. And I think Pat got in there and was like, no. And I think Jimmy Butler has two choices now. He can either come back and be like, yeah, that was kind of dumb. I'd like to come back, by the way. Can we work out a deal? But if Jimmy Butler's like, F that, this, that, whatever.
Digging in.
He ain't winning.
Yeah, and that's, I guess that was the question I wrote here. It's like, Riley has won in all these things.
Yes.
But it feels like there's been a little bit of, like, some stars. He's been able to get, you know, LeBron and Bosch and Shaq.
And Ray Allen.
It's just amazing. But sometimes it feels like the end for some of those guys doesn't, I don't know. It's not always smooth. I feel like they respect him.
Yes.
But, you know, there was a little tiff even with him and LeBron. Now I think it's fine. But it just, I guess because Riley always wins.
There's other teams since Pat Riley's been in Miami that have more championships. But they got championships.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know, whatever list of since Pat Riley arrived as GM, I don't know where they are as far as best, worst record in the NBA. But I got to think they're in the top three.
Yeah.
Miami when it comes to that. They are perennial contenders. They're the team that they could be missing all their stars, and Kings fans know this, and they show up. You better be ready to play. And that Pat Riley, Eric Spoelstra, and remember, before Eric Spoelstra, it was Pat Riley. Mm-hmm. So they're almost like Pittsburgh Steeler-esque, but with more on-court success in a shorter time than Pittsburgh's have had over the last 20 years. It works until it doesn't. I think it's still working.
Yeah.
Now, at some point, Pat Riley going to get a little too old and a little too crotchety for the league and say something, and you just politely, we've mutually parted. Sure. Took a long time for Jerry West to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, Jerry still is. Wouldn't mind Pat Riley coming to this organization.
Sure.
You know, as a president of basketball operations. It's just nice to see that in this day and age that can still happen. We'll take a break when we come back. When it comes to spotting talent in the NBA, it ain't easy. We've got to, everyone knows about Nikola Jokic, second round Taco Bell commercial during the draft. Well, there's another example here of it being an inexact science. Yeah. We'll tell
guess
you
the
who.
Player, yeah.
Yeah, guess the player. We'll do that next. Sacktown Sports.
What's hot?
Yeah, hot. Real hot.
And what's not?
It's not good.
Brought to you by American Energy Heating and Air, Sacramento's complete heating and cooling company and second opinion partner.
A good way to remember someone's name when you first meet them. Write their name with your dominant hand on your non-dominant knee when you meet them for the first time or just after. Don't ask me. It works. So I write with my right hand on my...
Why would you ever write with your non-dominant hand?
That's a great point.
But so I go right hand to left knee, Dave.
That's way too much work.
You write that on your knee, and that's then you're walking around with Dave written on your knee.
That's what the text line says. Now you have a semi-permanent tattoo of Dave on your knee until you shower a couple times.
Sharpie, crayon, pen,
I guess
pencil,
whatever makes a mark.
Tattoo.
Now that would work.
Yeah.
We're going to look like that dude from Memento.
Right. Yeah. Which is such a weird yet good movie. Who's hot?
Really? I wouldn't expect you to like that movie.
I liked it. It bothered me because it was like in a video game where you have to solve puzzles and I just want to shoot the thing. But also, I really appreciated the creativity of it.
You do? It's not a straightforward story where we know how everyone ends up?
It's like Blair Witch Project. Like, the movie itself is whatever, but when somebody introduces like a completely new concept in a Memento's case, you're going backwards. I'm like, okay, like, look, I thought I'd see, it's like when somebody introduces a new dunk. Maybe it's not the greatest dunk I've ever seen, but hey, almost every dunk's been done. That's a new one.
Yeah.
I've seen the movie once, Chris, by the way. It is not that rewatchable for me.
You know, it's going to end or begin.
Huh? Exactly.
I've forgotten enough of it. I think if I watched it again, I'd be like, oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's been a long time. That's been like 20 years, right?
Has it been? Yeah, whatever happened to that guy? Guy, whatever. He was in L.A. Confidential?
Yeah.
Guy Pierce. Is he still doing things?
He's probably been in like a few Marvel movies.
I think the last one I saw, he was in the Marvel movie where he was the fire guy. Mm. He was the Iron Man fire guy.
He got burned.
Yeah, he's the one that mad.
Fire guy.
Throw the fire. He's Fireman.
My favorite villain.
Yeah, Fireman.
Right. He's a fireman?
He's a fireman.
They needed the Fire Falcon to stop him.
Fire Falcon. Right, I don't know.
You need to write the lyrics on your left knee.
Fire Falcon. Oh, that's on my arm. Knee. Who's hot?
Jalen Brunson.
Yeah, he is.
Brunson scored 42 points in the Knicks' 121-117 win over the Pacers. He was 14 of 26 from the field and a perfect 14 of 14 from the free throw line.
Mm, that's pretty good.
He's also the first player in NBA history to have at least 40 points and made a three in four straight playoff games.
By the way, during the break, Simone took me aside. I haven't talked to her in a while, and she asked me for a favor. I think I'm 9 of 9 on favors, Simone's asked me.
You've been able to come through?
Yeah, I think so. Nice. I'm about 9 of 9, Simone. I don't know why. I just have a soft spot for Simone. I don't know why. I don't like people, Jerry. You know this. It takes a long time.
Oh, I definitely know that.
Yeah, you
Are
know
you
that.
Are you keeping score?
What do you think your record is with me, Dave?
Well, how many favors have you asked me for?
I've asked quite a few.
How many doable favors have I not come through on? Can you remember any specifically? Because I can remember some that I have come through on.
Oh, you've come through a lot.
Yeah. I feel like if I can and you ask, I know you're not going to just ask.
I remember the weird one that you were going to be like, I can do this for you right now. It was when I was in Vegas for the Mayweather Ricky Hatton fight,
okay,
which ironically is how I became a Manchester City fan. But you're like, hey, man, I know you can't get into the fight. How would you feel about going to the UFC show at the same time? And I was like, no.
That's right. I remember. I do remember that. I don't remember major events that happened in your life, but I remember. Well, and then, like, what was it last year in Portland? I had the seat ready for Frankie.
Yeah, you're like 0-for on Frankie.
I'm 0-for. That's
no,
twice.
No, that doesn't count. 0-for from him, from accepting.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I've tried, but I generally.
Yeah, I get where he was. He was in a tough spot.
I get it. Yeah. But anyways, so you're welcome, Simone.
He was worried about the PD that's not here anymore.
Yeah, I hated PD.
Yeah.
PD.
He didn't want to cry with you.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Oh. He would have been on TV, too. That's a good decision by Frankie. Yeah. Who's not?
The Denver Nuggets.
Hey.
They lost their second game to the Timberwolves, 106-80. They shot 29 of 83 on the night for a shooting percentage of 34.9%. Also not good from three. They were 9 of 30, shooting 30%.
You know who else isn't hot? Buddy Hield.
Last game, he was good.
Listen to Daryl Morey, his general manager. Have you heard this yet?
Mm-hmm.
Being asked about Buddy Hield, he was significant. I know you guys can't hear this. Talk a little bit about Buddy Hield's end of the season and how it went and blah, blah, blah. They're asking Daryl Morey, the GM of the Sixers, on Buddy Hield and where he is now. And I'm vamping.
Cause yeah, I think at no fault to Buddy's, I think the fit was less good than I thought.
Less good.
You know, he got... You know, obviously, most of his time was without Joel, but I thought when Joel was back, that his impact and his shooting, that he'd get more open shots. He didn't, and so you know that's on me that it didn't work out as well as we hoped.
There's more there, but
yeah, there's a lot more.
Voof.
Yeah.
Shall we go streaking?
Okay.
Let's go streaking.
It's time to go streaking.
We're going streaking!
Hey. Who is the Nostradamus of MLB?
Who can keep the streak going? Oh. It's time to go streaking.
What the hell are you doing?
We're streaking.
All right, to recap, Dave was at 1, I was at 1, Chris was at 0. So we were trying to get this thing going. Dave has the season record of what, 7?
7.
Show all-time record of 11, I believe.
Yes.
Last year.
Yeah.
So, Dave, you're like, you know what? I'm going to ride this hotness of the Oakland A's.
That's right.
So, I'm taking Tyler Nevin.
Tyler Nevin, son of Phil, I think.
Yes.
Yeah,
sure.
Probably.
4 plate appearances.
Oh, come on, Tyler, you wiener.
0 hits.
Hey, Tyler Nevin. You know what? I hope they move to Vegas.
It's over.
It's over. It's over now. Move on.
Don't you have to get more, than?
Oh, he's right. Oh, okay. You have to be at 2.
All right. Well, I was at 1, and I said, I'm starting this thing. I'm going because I'm taking the guy that's the hottest hitter in baseball.
He is the son of Phil Nevin.
Is he really?
Tyler Nevin is the son of Phil Nevin, and Nevin and Mark Kotze were teammates in San Diego when Nevin was a boy. Upon Nevin joining the A's, Mark Kotze recalled him in the team's clubhouse as a child.
Go outside, nerd.
Yeah.
Get out. Go.
All right, Jason.
So I was at 1. I'm like, I'm not messing around. I need to get this thing going. I want to get the new show record. I'm going with Alec Bohm. This guy is an 18-game hitting streak by himself. He's playing the Giants.
Yeah.
He scored a bunch of runs, got all these hits. He had 4 plate appearances, and he got me 0 hits.
Oh, my God. You killed his 18-game hitting streak? We talked about this yesterday. He had an 18-game hitting streak. You could have picked him any day over the last 18, maybe 19 with an off day, and he would have gotten a hit. And then the first time you pick him... Jason, are you the cooler?
I'm going to test it today, and you'll see with my pick. Chris, trying to now have the show lead of 1, if he can get a hit. He also went to the A's. He took the guy who was hot yesterday, Brent Rooker.
Rooker. Hand.
He had 4 plate appearances.
Uh-huh.
He had 0 hits.
Oh, come on.
We went 0-for-12 yesterday.
Come on.
We're all at 0.
I am starting a new strategy.
Okay.
You just gave me an idea, and I hope I'm not stealing it from you. If okay. I am, I will
respond. That's fine. I already got my player locked
in. I am going to try for the next week. So today is Tuesday. This is through Tuesday. I am going to take, when applicable, whoever has the longest active hitting streak
okay.
in baseball.
Okay.
I'm curious as to how that will go. So today, the longest streak in baseball currently with 15 hits in his last 42, 3 home runs, 10 RBI, batting .357 over his 10-game streak, Jake Cronenworth.
Ah, I picked him earlier this year. He didn't give me a hit.
Ah, well, we'll see.
Okay, Jake Cronenworth.
Jay Cronenworth.
I am taking baseball's number one hitter. Let's see if I am the cooler. Shohei Ohtani. I'm not messing around.
Shohei Ohtani Kitane.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm going back with old reliable Mookie. Jaren Duran.
Oh.
Jaren Duran.
The reflex.
Jake Cronenworth, Shohei Ohtani, and Jaren Duran.
Yeah.
We are not going 0 for 12 tomorrow.
Going to 0 for 16.
Damn it, Jason. We will take a break. When we come back, as I said earlier, we will get into the inexact science of assessing talent in the National Basketball Association with one in particular player that I think a lot of teams wish they hadn't passed on right now. And no, we're not talking about Nikola Jokic. It's somebody else. Who is it? Oh, my God. Oh, are we going to know? Yes, you will. Next.